Hello and welcome to the NRL podcast as we head into round four of the NRL Telstra Premiership. I'm Zach Bailey, joined by our expert Jamie Soward. Jamie, did you enjoy the footy on the weekend?
Certainly did. A few things come out of it. Obviously, a big talking point Friday night. We'll get into a little bit of that. And the last couple of days, you know, a couple of big announcements, the women's NRL competition and also the Manly Salary Cap. But yep. Where do you want to start, mate?
We're going to rip into that. I just want to focus on footy, if I can, quickly. A couple of big injuries with big players, Bevan French and Jared Hayne, Kane Evans, Clint Gutherson still not back for the Eels. So they're in a bit of trouble. But the biggest one from the weekend, and he's one of the real good kids in the game, Nathan Cleary. I mean, it was terrible not only for him and the Panthers, but as a footy fan to see him sitting on the bench with his head in his hands after we thought he might miss a couple of weeks with a grade one tear, grade three medial, up to 10 weeks out.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I think as a fan, when you step away from the game, there's certain people that you want to watch every week, and he's definitely up there. He's really class personified in terms of how he handles himself, how he plays the game, and to see the images of him on the sideline on the weekend with his hand, with his head in his hand was really disappointing. But he'll be back 10 weeks. You know, if he gets back, I talked to a couple of guys. They've done similar injuries. They've, you know, maybe 6 to 7, possibly even 8 at worst. So hopefully we see Nathan Cleary back on the field soon.
Apparently he's in pretty good headspace considering what went down.
Yeah.
He's already back in like rehab. He's a complete professional, and as we know, he's so mature beyond his years. The call for Anthony Griffin to go with Tyrone Peachey, James Maloney in the halves, and a youngster on the bench that you actually played with.
Yeah, Jerome Luai comes in on the halves. He comes off the bench. I don't agree with that. I'd like to see him just start. I think it's important as you make your debut that you go in and start the game. There's nothing worse than you're making your debut and you want to, you know, get into the game, and you're waiting to get into the game, and you're all that nervous energy. You may as well just go out there and get it. Happy to see Tyrone Peachey starting, though. Big fan of the Peach. Hopefully he goes out. They need to start fast, the Panthers. I don't care what the score is in terms of if they're losing or winning, you know, but it needs to be tight and physical, and they need to just concentrate on that effort, enthusiasm, which you spoke about a number of teams in the opening round, Zach. But their effort needs to lift that first 20 minutes so that they don't find themselves. Because if they find themselves 14-0 down, we're in a place they've never won before, 1,300 smiles, it could be anything.
What can we expect to see from Jerome, though? A lot of us haven't seen him come through the ranks. He's a junior Kiwi, and he's a Samoan international at the World Cup. So what can we expect to see from the youngster?
He's got a level head on his shoulders. He's controlled in what he does. He's precise. Likes to pack up... likes to support the ball a lot. So look for him to be heavily involved. Very similar to Nathan Cleary in terms of, you know, level head and being able to control the team.
I found it quite amusing that the moment Nathan Cleary was injured, everyone was talking about who's going to be the Origin halfback, New South Wales Origin halfback. He's never played a game for the Blues yet. He's been talked up. Of course, Origin is only a couple of months away, June 6th at the MCG. I'm excited for that. No doubt the Melbourne crowd will hopefully turn out for that, because there's going to be plenty of talk about who's going to be the number 7 for the Blues.
Yeah, plenty of talk always about the New South Wales team. Personally, we pick it too early every year. So
you're not going to tell me who your halfback's going to be?
Oh, look, I think there's a couple of names on a serious note. James Maloney will be there. Whether it's at 7 or 6, we'll have to wait and see. The other names that I've heard and even been tossed up, you know, a guy like Blake Green, repeat sets. You know, they talk about some statistics coming out. Mitchell Pearce, 17 origins, not one repeat set. Blake Green led the league last year in repeat sets, so maybe that's something that Brad Fittler looks forward to. We'll have to wait and see, but yeah, it's funny, isn't it? You know, Nathan Cleary had played for New South Wales. We're talking about him like he played 3 series already.
Yeah,
he's that good, but he'll be there. It'll just have to take a little bit longer.
It's kind of is it refreshing the way, though, now that the focus won't be on him for 10 weeks?
So even
if he gets... Like the talk before... I remember I went to 3 or 4 press conferences. It was like, Nathan, whether it was to James Maloney, whether it was to Anthony Griffin, whether it was to Nathan himself, the questions were already about Origin. And he dealt with them the same line, the same way. And he wasn't rude about it. He just had to say, well, look, I haven't even kicked a ball yet.
What do you want him to say? As a reporter, when you ask that question, as a reporter, what do you want him to say?
I'm saying that he dealt with it very well, because he said, of course I would love to play, but let's be serious. I feel like everyone gets ahead. Not only the media, but I feel as if everyone gets ahead of themselves when it comes to Origin. And this is a lesson for everyone to learn.
And why do you ask the question?
Because it's topical.
You get told to.
Everyone, no, because everyone is interested in it, whether you like it or not.
Look, I don't think they're as interested in as their team winning. I think in another month, you know, things will start to ramp up. But how can you judge performances the first couple of weeks? You stick a mic in front of a young kid's face and you ask him, what would you like to play Origin? No, I wouldn't.
Like, well, that is when it is a news story.
Yeah, but that's right. So you just, yeah. In other words, the players are making your job easy.
It's funny because James Maloney, when I put it to him a couple of times ahead of the season, we had a podcast with James Maloney and Nathan Cleary, and I said to Nathan, I said, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk about Origin, and James Maloney just came back straight back at me and goes, because you keep bloody bringing it up all the time. Anyway, I'm guilty, but hopefully we see Nathan Cleary back in 6 or 7 weeks instead of the 10 that was originally fit. All right, the referees, you mentioned them off the top. They were in the spotlight for the wrong reasons after round three. Let's focus on the crackdown first about the penalties. Do you like that they're going harder with the policing of the ruck and the 10 metres to start the year? Or is it really hampering the flow of the game?
I understand that they are concentrating on some certain issues that Todd Greenberg wants to, you know, come down on. But for me, there needs to be a fluency to the game. And we saw last Thursday night between Cowboys and Storm that game just became so, you know, just not attractive to watch. I was sitting at home with my wife, and when we're trying to entice viewers, Zach, and get them to watch our game, and we want our game to be number one in Australia, you need some sort of fluency to understand the rules. Right now, you know, Maddie's watched a lot of games. She's asking me what the penalties are for, and I'm rewinding and having to see if he definitely was offside. I mean, one thing that came to mind was Cooper Cronk on the Sunday night just got off his line quickly, but because he was 15 metres away, it looked like he was offside, but he'd actually waited, and then the ref gave a penalty. I'd like to see them. If they're going to crack down, okay, then on Thursday night, after three penalties inside the 10, both captains should have been called. In the Super League, Zach, they have a warning, what they call a warning. So if you're a repeat offender, you come up with two penalties in the space of whatever minutes, then they actually have a signal where they warn the whole team that the next person to do that, now, for instance, if I'm offside, you know, twice in 6 minutes, next person to do that, if they feel like it's deliberate, is going to get sent to the bin. And then all of a sudden, you're going back to your team, you're going, Zach, come on, mate. Next one's going to go. And all of a sudden, you're taking your time to be able to make sure that you're onside. I just feel that the referee on Thursday night really struggled to come to terms that Jonathan Thurston and Cam Smith were opposing captains, and not once called him in to warn that the rhythm of the game was getting disrupted.
Do you see the reason why they're trying to crack down, though? Do you believe that players and coaches have been trying to manipulate the rules for so long that the refs have finally have to? But they've got to do something, and they're finally cracking, going, right, we've got to crack down.
Whatever the rules are, players, coaches, we saw the wrestling, so everyone gets a wrestling coach. Now everyone's got a referee's consultant. Whatever you do to the game, everyone's going to look for that advantage, whether it's on or off the field. So for me, if they're going to crack down, that's fine, but there still needs to be some empathy for the game and some rhythm. You know, I think back to one of my favourite referees, and I know that'll be hard for people to hear, but Bill Harrigan. He had some empathy for the game. I've had many a chats and commentated with him so many times, and I know that you've produced for him. His stories were, I would have let that go, or, I would have just caught them both in, and he controlled it, but you never saw him on the field.
Yeah.
That's what you want from a good referee. Someone to control the game, but you don't know who's reffing. And at the moment, I think we're just seeing too much. Penalty goals are up, almost 100%. Yeah. This time last year. So it's frustrating for someone that's watching the game. And I know this is divided opinion. And unfortunately, for our game, we're talking more about the referees and they're under more pressure than ever at the moment.
But is it short-term pain for long-term gain? Because looking at it from the other side of the fence, it surely this crackdown won't last long, and it won't need to last long if teams start abiding by the rules and listening to the new regime. The
game's been played one way for so long. You can't expect blokes cold turkey to just start getting onside every time.
I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight,
but
in 5 weeks, or 6 weeks, 10 weeks, can you see it being a cleaner, better game, less stoppages, because players aren't laying on the ruck longer and they're not trying to get off the line
quicker? It's the offside one. That's the offside one that's getting everyone off. But the first time in Golden Point for a long time, and I've played in one of those games, we've seen a penalty awarded. Now, we check every try. For obstruction, we check every try for grounding. But when a game is decided by a field goal or a possible penalty, we don't check it.
I was going to ask you, you brought up the warning system, but ways to fix things. Do you think in Golden Point like that, with match-winning plays, regardless of whether it's a try or not, that the bunker should be called in to rule on those incidents so we don't have a repeat of Friday night?
Yes, it means too much. It means too much. The Tigers, they would have been, I spoke to a few of them calling Saturday afternoon, the ISP. I spoke to a few of them. They would have been, Benji Marshall said, look, we probably weren't good enough to win, but we weren't bad enough to lose. So they've been penalised 2 competition points, which, you know, at the end of the year can come back and bite you. They were penalised off the fact that no one really checked it after we check everything else, because the 2 plays before that where Sarko went for a field goal, Darius Boyd illegally obstructs Peter Godinet twice in the 2 attempts. One he kicks it and the other one he misses. So I just think the game is, you know, too much relies on that result to not go up and check it. But in saying that, if the referees are going to get some rhythm back into the game and this crackdown is, you know, we do see a better result at the end, then that's fine. But at the moment, I tell you what, it's frustrating to watch.
It may be frustrating, but I've got faith and hope that in 5-6 weeks, it's a cleaner game, there are less penalties, and it's back to the days of Billy Harrigan in Origin when there's only 4 penalties.
Hope so.
Are you a fan of Golden Point, though?
Love Golden Point.
Okay, good. That's positive, then.
Love Golden Point.
Because at the end of the day, whether fans like it or not, we're in the entertainment industry, and that's the same line that will be thrown out all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes the play leading up to the Golden Point, the field goal or try that wins it, isn't that flash. But it's almost forgotten a lot of the time for the moment. You look at Mitchell Pearce in round 1. Look at that moment. Without Golden Point, we don't have that.
No, we don't. And I've been on this podcast. I've spoken to Michael Chambers about it. He wants Golden Try. But the skill to be able to kick a field goal under that amount of pressure, there's no better feeling.
All right. Well, let's hope there are no more refereeing controversies from round 4 and for the rest of the rest of the season. Another big story this week, the Manly salary cap sanctions were handed down by the NRL. The big one going forward is that they have to remain $330,000 under the cap for this year and next. I want to know from a player's perspective what that is like. They're going to say that they're not affected by it and that it's outside, but surely, whether it's not, you know, they're not going to have a player there maybe physically with that $330,000, but the effect mentally in trying to get up for a game this week and how tough that is.
I think this week they actually get up for the game. They're playing the Raiders. It'd be easy to get up short term, it's long term, but the difference is, remember when Parramatta lost their points? For the first 6 weeks after that, they were outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, they rattled off, I think, 4 or 5 wins in that first 6 weeks. After that, it starts to take its toll because you can only go to the well so many times and grab that emotion, and then all of a sudden the well dries up. So I don't think it will affect Manly too much. You know, if anything, it's going to affect DCE, the amount of pressure and I guess exposure and media coverage he's getting. But in terms of that whole team and what Trent Barrett's going through, that team should respond being at home at Brookvale this week.
But what about DC? Put yourself in his shoes. You've been through adversity in your career, mm-hmm. not... You've been in a club that's had salary cap issues, but how do you deal with a player when you wake up and your face is on the back page of a paper when you didn't know that you were part of this?
It's hard to deal with, but unfortunately, that's the business we're in. You know, DCE is the ultimate professional. He's the captain of that club, and as far as he knows, and as a player, you only know certain things. You know, you go in and sign your deal, and it's not up to you to know where everything else is coming from. So, DCE will be able to handle that. He's had a good start to the year. A little bit disappointing last week, but I look for him to bounce back and continue on this year.
What about just media speculation and media attention on players in general?
Mm-hmm.
I had a chat to you earlier today and you said that sometimes it's hard that the media and people, fans, want to see your personality.
Yep.
But if you show a bit of character or say something the wrong way, the club or the media or someone will come back and smash you about it.
Yeah, so it's society and the community and everything that watches our game. And 65 to 70% probably thought that I was a wanker my whole career, because every time I stepped in front of a camera and early on in my career, I actually understood how the media worked because I wanted to get into it ever since I started playing rugby league. And from early on in my career, I sort of demanded that respect when I hadn't done anything. So a lot of my press conferences seemed like I was really prickly, and I just understood.
They were.
I just understood the game, and I understood what you guys were trying to do. I understand that you guys had a job to do, but you're also trying to get a quote. I could just dead bat it and just say everything same every week. Sometimes I'd mix it up, and then all of a sudden the viewer at home or the reporter goes out. I had an incident with Andrew Webster once when I was getting selected, or the year I played Origin, and I'd come out of the shower, and you can ask Webby, we'd laugh about it now, but I came out of the shower and Webby said, can I get an interview? And I said, can I at least get a pair of pants on, you know, like that? And he wrote that I was a rock star and a diva. And you know, 2 weeks later, we sat down and actually talked about it. And I was like, mate, you know, like, I take the piss out of myself
all the time.
A lot. Yeah. And for people that understand me inside my inner sanctum, then they get it and they enjoy that side of things. But for people outside trying to get in, and I know you'll share your story soon, that's hard for them to understand and hard for people to watch. So every time, sometimes when you're looking at it from a fan's point of view or media point of view and yourself, if you come to interview me and I've either had a bad day or haven't played well and you're asking those questions and I tell you to bugger off, it's not necessarily a personal attack on you. Although if you've written something about me in the past, I probably remember it because most players are social media savvy. But once I'd won the competition and then went to England and come back, I found myself at peace with the media and I found a real mutual respect that I'd finally eased up a little bit and decided to enjoy the media a little bit more, and they'd decided to give me a little bit more rope. And I think, I'd like to think that from then on, I know you'll share your story in a minute, but from then on, I had earned the right to be able to speak my mind, and that's why I'm in the position I am today.
It is funny. I will share my story. I don't know what year it was, but
2015,
yeah. Penrith were going through a real rough trot. You were down towards the bottom of the ladder. Mm-hmm. Only a couple of rounds left, I think, and there was all this talk about the wooden spoon. So as a budding young journo, I'd go out with my cameraman. I thought, what am I going to ask him today? We actually rocked up late to the press conference, which I think was half of the issue, because normally from the media side of things, you probably ask a couple of lighter questions. You don't want to annoy, you don't want to go in straight for the jugular or anything straight away, especially when you're going there to get a line about the club struggling, because that's, you know, like... I almost got the answer that I wanted out of you because it was an emotional answer.
Yeah.
And you're not trying to go to get that. You're trying to get a line. But anyway, so I asked, so I rocked up late. You've seen probably, you know, mid-press conference, and I've just said to you straight away, Jamie, I think it was something along the lines of, Jamie, how do you avoid winning the wooden spoon, getting the wooden spoon this year? And you've just said, we're not even thinking about the wooden spoon. What do you mean? Like, you just shut me down, and I've gone in again, and you've just... I don't know if you remember what you said. But
I remember it because I remember finishing the interview and walking over to our media manager and said, who is that that's coming? Okay, firstly, don't come in late to a press conference.
Yep. Well, a bit of traffic out on Mulgoa Road.
Not my problem, mate. All right, if you're one minute late, you may as well be an hour late.
But it's all right for players to rock up half an hour late to a press conference?
Hold on. If you're 15 minutes early, then you're 15 minutes late. So get there on time. But then you've come in, and look, back to our chat last week on the podcast, you had no idea what I was dealing with at the end of 2015. So for me... I got some snotty-nosed little kid coming up asking me about the wooden spoon. I've never won one in my career, and I just give you what for. And that was probably your version of not having my respect because you were young into the game, and that was me probably doing what the media did to me early on and go, well, who do you think you are, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, look, it comes it's around funny. Full circle when you think about it. But I think too often that... We want footy players to be themselves, but when they are themselves, we're like, oh, look at this bloke, what a carry-on, you know? But at the end of the day, I'm my own brand, I protect my own brand at all costs. So if I'm prickly with you one day and then the next day I might be fine, that's how I am. You take it or leave it. That's why I'm able to do things like this podcast, like be involved with NRL.com, because at the end of the day, whilst we're affiliated with the NRL, my job is to come out to the fans and say what I believe, and then... that way you get a lot more respect, whether it is the right call with the referees or whatever. I think that the game as a whole is growing and pushing towards that direction. Sometimes you're going to get feedback that you don't like, and sometimes you're going to say things that people don't like, but I feel comfortable within my own skin to be able to say that stuff.
And I almost feel as if you have a run-in with a journo or something and you have a chat about it after, though, the respect is better for one another.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to say that I was in the wrong asking you that, but I learned how to ask a question the right way.
Yeah.
So that I get the answer I want, and so I don't just go straight under your skin.
I've had a run-in with three or four people, but it's not personal. It's just that you caught me on an off day after a bugger of a season. Yeah. Now I work with you every week, and I work with Chamis, you know, on inside the NRL. So for me, it's like I said, there's a respect thing that gets, you know, sometimes gets lost in there, because you've got a job to do. That's your job, is to get me to react for a headline, because if it comes up Fox Sports or Channel 9 or whatever, that Zach Bailey reports and then my headline, you've got your job. You've done your job. Much as I do my job by kicking field goals in extra point.
Yeah, exactly. And it was funny, just back to the story, I remember when I walked back in the office that day and a couple of the journos go, geez, Jamie Soward's a fan of yours, isn't he? I said, not today, was it? Good times. All right, I'm glad we can laugh about it now. The other side of things, though, there is a lot of control within clubs these days, because they don't want their players to say the wrong thing, bring pressure on them, you know, say too much about their playing style, whatever. How hard is that to balance when you want to be the person that you are, but you also don't want to annoy the club at the same time? Because you hear a lot of stuff off camera, and a lot of players tell you stuff, whether it's, you know, you might see them for a beer or something, but when it comes, the camera's on or the dictaphone's on or whatever, it's shut up shop. Is it tough to deal with when you want to be yourself and the character? You want to be Jamie Soward, but you've got to be, hey, I'm this footy player, I'm ultra professional, I can't really say anything, here's the club line.
I'm probably finding that balance better now and tiptoeing the company line, as I said, working with NRL.com and the NRL. I think it's a nice balance to be able to have someone who is working with the NRL but can also say it how he wants. And there's no pressure on me. Like, I'm not going out there and playing week to week. I can get sacked at any time, you know. But I think for me right now, I've found a nice little niche that I can judge and see what's going on in the game and be my own personality without being, you know, right against, because I think the refs do a wonderful job in our game, and without them we don't have a game. So but I think it's fair that I'd be called out on a mistake if I missed a match winning goal from in front. So I think you can do that, and then on the other side of things, I think people are now starting to see that my personality, and instead of 70% of people thinking I'm a wanker, I've probably got like maybe 71, 72%. You know, they understand that I like having a laugh. And look, at the end of the day, yeah, we are what we are. We say what we think. And if you're not going to back it up, then you may as well not do it.
But back to your playing days when you are there.
It's hard, mate, because you don't want to put pressure on. If me and you are a team.
So put this example, right? Yeah. I interviewed Marty Tapau a couple of weeks ago, right? Yeah. And he came out and said, we'll win the comp.
Yeah.
And I said, when? And he said, we had it on NRL.com, and he said, we'll win it this year. And yeah, and I said to him, you're telling me that Manly could? And he goes, no, we will. But if you listen to what he said after, he said, it's all about positive affirmations. If I don't believe that we can win the comp as a team, and a lot of us, if we don't believe we can, we won't. So I get his point. But again, that, or does that automatically bring pressure on? And did the club go, oh man, like, why did you say that for?
Yeah, they do. And what you've got to think about, I was always told that, talk about yourself. Yeah, you want to talk about form, you want to talk about what you're looking for, talk about yourself, because you put pressure on yourself. Don't put pressure on the team. You know, don't, one, you don't bag the team out, and two, you don't put pressure on the team. So for me, if I'd had a stinker of a game, I'd be saying something along the lines, or if I thought we could win the comp, I'd be saying, look, you know, we're in a really good position this year. You know, we're going to have to just get to the dance first and then see what happens, because it could be one game and you're out. And I've been off the back of those, you know, final series where it happens like that, 8-1. So I think sometimes, but that sent NRL.com wild, because everyone's going, what are you saying that for? There's no way they're going to win it. And that's the beauty of social media. It creates conversation. But at times, there'll be that percentage out there, the keyboard warriors who get in and go, oh, and talk crap. But all he's saying is he believes that his team can win the comp. Now, if he doesn't believe he can win the comp, why is he playing?
Well, it's, to me, from the journalist side of things, it's more, like I said before, it's more of a story if he says we can't win the comp.
Yeah, it is, because so, and it's same as when, like, it would annoy me that journos, you'd come out and you'd be like, so, what are your guys' goals for the year? And we're like, well, not to finish 15th, not to finish
not to finish with a wooden spoon.
Oh, we want to make the 8. We want to make, that's why. A lot of the American stuff that I follow, I'd like just to see some imagination in some of the questions. And I challenged you. We've had conversations where I challenge you to come up with different conversations and different points of being able to challenge me to think, because too often you get asked the same questions and you go into robot mode And that's what creates those boring answers, which doesn't help the game and doesn't help my brand or doesn't help you do your job.
And that's why we love having you on board, Jamie Soward, because you always bring a different take to things and give insight behind, because you've been both sides now as a player, but you've also transformed into a media personality as well, which is no doubt tough. Now, we do have plenty of questions, and we normally leave them to the end, but a lot of them this week revolved around the launch of the women's competition that happened yesterday. So for those that don't know, the NRL Holden's Women's Premiership, first one ever, was announced yesterday. So the four teams that will take part, the Brisbane Broncos, the St George Illawarra Dragons, the Sydney Roosters and the New Zealand Warriors. Now, all NRL clubs had the opportunity to put a bid in for a team. The NRL was hoping for six teams. They've decided to go with four. They only got six bids. The two that didn't make it, South Sydney and Cronulla. Now, both clubs are disappointed that they didn't make it, rightfully so. Here are some of the questions coming in, though. This is from Joanne Gowdy. Why wasn't Cronulla given a women's spot when the Roosters aren't even fielding a team now? They have been trying to poach our girls. Brian, the Brisbane Lion. Here's another one. What criteria were used to select the teams for the NRL's comp? Sharks and Souths had women's comps and not included. Broncos and the Roosters, the opposite. Hashtag crazy. Why? And this is from Tez. Why have the NRL only gone with four teams for the W Rugby League comp? I'll try and answer those some of those in a minute. But Jamie Soward, what are your thoughts on the comp? It's exciting to see. Have they done it right? What's your view if you're in charge?
I don't think they've done it right, purely off the fact that any time we've seen women's rugby league in the past 2 years the pioneers that have been the Cronulla Sharks and the women in and around that. You think of Alana Ferguson, how much exposure she has gotten for the rugby league world in terms of women in sport and women in our sport. She's now on Channel 9, she's on the footy show, she's everywhere doing that. And that all came about her playing for the Sharks and the Gillaroos. So I've spoken to her about it, and she has said that, you know, disappointed because Cronulla are the pioneers of this women's competition. They've been around and laid platforms for women to be able to come through and play rugby league. And the other thing is, you know, four teams from demographics that we haven't heard much about. We haven't heard if there's a Brisbane team. You know, we've seen Penrith under-18s. We've seen the Sydney competition be successful. I'd just like to see them even push it off a year and get the model right, because it's four teams over 3 weeks or 4 weeks. They all play each other once and then there's a grand final. Like the AFLW did it right. They've got six or seven teams. They actually have a top four, and it's been a success because they've actually put all their resources into it and done it right. I spoke to a good friend of mine, Joel Kane, who came up with a solution or possible angle to maybe do it better of a tri-nations or tri-series, where you've got New Zealand, New South Wales and Queensland in a little play each other once, you know, over 3 weeks, and then the final is on grand final day. I think we've just jumped into it. I don't want to say it won't succeed, but it's just disappointing that from a fan's point of view that Cronulla Sharks didn't get it. Like, if they wanted six teams and they got six bids, it only seems fair to be able to have six teams in, because at the moment it just seems like it's a bit of an exhibition.
Well, I've spoken to the NRL and they said the reasons why, a couple of reasons why the four teams were picked, due to the geographic reason. So they wanted, the team in Sydney, the Roosters covers the Sydney region and north up all the way up to Newcastle for now.
Yeah.
The New Zealand Warriors, that's obvious to get that brand over there. And the Kiwi Ferns are a big part of women's rugby league, get them involved. The Broncos, one of, if not the biggest market, considering there's only one team there. And that covers Queensland for now. And the Dragons was Southern Sydney, and they were going up against the Sharks. I was told that the Dragons' bid was better than the Sharks. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't have two teams in the same area if they had four, because they wouldn't cover as big a geographical area.
And it all got nine Sydney teams in the NRL.
But if they're going for four teams, they didn't want two from Southern Sydney and then miss out on a Brisbane. But this is the next point. So the main stakeholders in this are the women. Now, some of the quotes from some of the players, where we've got Sam Bremner, who is Gillaroo's fullback. She plays for the Dragons. So the Dragons have got a 14,000 girl and women competition catchment area. So she said that to start smaller in four quality teams is the way to go. She was speaking to The Australian. The only way to make women's rugby league bigger is to have quality games played. At this stage, we don't have the grassroots base that we would like, but that's why we're starting an NRL women's competition so girls have something to aspire to. Now, again, speaking to women involved in the game and behind this decision, they said the players drove for four teams. Mm-hmm. And they had no decision on what teams were there. I think the NRL would have loved to have had a Western Sydney team, but there were no bids from Western Sydney clubs.
I think it's fair for us to clear up that I'm not against women.
I was going to get to that point. It's exciting.
It's very exciting. I love the fact that we're going to be able to see some of these girls come up and play the wonderful game of rugby league, the game that I love that gave me so much. Yeah, I love the fact that we're going to be able to see those girls.
All right, it might be tips time.
Let's get into it.
Now, last week we didn't do our tips. We ran out of time. But this week we are going to run through them. It all kicks off round four. The Cowboys against the Panthers. The Panthers have never won in Townsville. James Tarmo's 200th game. Who wins it?
Oh, I think the Cowboys do. They bounce back from last week. Been a little bit quiet the first couple of weeks as Jason Taumalolo, but I saw enough from them last week that they'd be disappointed in their effort, and there's no better place for them to bounce back than up at home in front of that big crowd. The Panthers' slow starts are alarming. No Nathan Cleary.
Yep.
Jerome Luai, as we mentioned, is off the bench, so they need to just jump in the water, the Panthers. Yeah, can't dip the toe in up there. It could get out of hand very quickly. I've been involved in those games where... Yeah, first 10 minutes, it's over and you're chasing your tail.
Okay, I'm tipping the Cowboys as well. A good Friday. This is one of the great modern-day rivalries. The Rabbitohs against the Bulldogs, the 2014 grand finalists. The Rabbitohs or the Bulldogs in this one?
Yeah, look, both teams coming off good wins. Probably a little bit more impressive for me was the Rabbitohs win against a hot Manly side, or what we thought was hot. The Bulldogs scrapped. We knew that that's going to be the type of team they'll be all year. The Bulldogs scrapping around, getting those 16-12, 16-14 wins. Last week only winning by 2 points and holding on. I like the Rabbitohs this week. I think they did enough and on a fast track. Geez, they got a fast outside back line.
And Sam Burgess, if he puts in a performance like that up against Clemmer and Aaron Woods, it could be one hell of a matchup.
This potentially is a match of the round.
Okay, I'm going with the Rabbitohs as well. The Sharks and Storm, that's Friday down in the Shire. Who have you gone for here?
I tossed and turned on this one. I wasn't sure, but I like the Sharks. Just.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? I want to know.
Well, Melbourne last week really impressed me. I think that the way that they changed up their attack, the beautiful play from Smith coming out, Slater underneath, they actually doubled up on that play and went back there, and that was just showed the absolute class of that side. Sharks got a good record at home. I think that they go to 2-2 on the year and just try and out-muscle this massive Melbourne pack. But there's something about the Sharks last week to show that whilst they won, they wouldn't be happy. And I think they make Shark Park a fortress again.
Wow. And Luke Lewis is a big in for them. Still question marks over Matt Moylan. I've gone with the Storm, the safe bet. The Roosters and the Warriors on Saturday.
Yeah, Warriors have been impressive in their first three games. Obviously, last week, they came back 19-12. I logged in and saw the score and switched it off and then back on. I thought it was a glitch in the system, the NRL website.
Never glitches on NRL.com website.
They won 2019. This team's doing what it can. They've played teams that probably won't make the eight now, but they've done all they can. This is going to be a bit bigger test for them. They're going to come up against the Roosters side that was outstanding last week. Luke Keary, Cooper Cronk. That just showed the fruits of what could be later on this year, come finals time. I like the Roosters, but don't be surprised if the Warriors, who've beaten them the last three times, come up with it and cause it and keep it close.
And to think that... James Tedesco hasn't even made that trio yet. It's just been the Cronk and Keary show. That's scary
exactly
for opposition teams. I've gone with the Roosters. Seagulls, Raiders.
I'm going with Manly. I said I wouldn't tip Canberra for a month. the heartbreak.
Tipster's nightmare.
First 2 weeks I tipped them, and then last week I had to go Warriors just because I just had no idea. But look, disappointing for Canberra. Aiden Caesar's out of this team. They go with proper halves pairing now. Adehin Garnall comes into the team, so... There's
breaking late mail as well. That's not confirmed just yet.
Yeah, it is now. This is why you've got to listen to the podcast. Yeah, look, that's what I'm hearing. Whether it's true or not, we'll have to wait.
He's battling a back injury, so it's hard to...
It's dicey. Back injuries are really tough to take.
You've been through them yourself.
Yeah, I have been. So, look, I'll take Manly, but no, not with any great confidence.
All right, the Dragons and the Knights. The Dragons are...
No, you know what? I'll take the Raiders.
Hey, whoa.
I'll take the Raiders.
Changing on the run. Okay, the Raiders. I don't know why. They're without Caesar, you're selling it to
me. Are these my tips you've circled?
No, I'm just adding it in just to show that you're jumping ship. All right, the Dragons and the Knights on Sunday afternoon, 4 p.m.
Oh, give me the Dragons. They really came out second half. Often, you know, when you get to a big lead, you know, you can get out there and just sort of waltz through the second half and just make sure you don't get injured. But they came out with a real arrogance and positive frame of mind, the Dragons. They really dominated that Titans side. It's going to be a long year for them. But I think that they come out and do the job this week over a Knights side that was pretty gallant in defeat, but just don't know if their, you know, their bubbles burst a little bit after two impressive performances. Then they come up against a bit of class, and the Dragons are certainly the real deal this year.
All right, I've gone with the Dragons as well. They're hard not to tip a... When you look at what Gareth Widdop and
Matt Dufty, for anyone that's listening, keep an eye on Matt Dufty.
Get him in your fantasy side. The Broncos Titans.
Yeah, Broncos Titans. This could literally be anything. Broncos absolutely horrible in attack last week. No fluency, no consistency in what they were doing. Darius Boyd, frustrated on the run watching him play, but I think they get it right this week. They're back at home. They love playing at home, this Broncos side. They love the big crowds. Easter Sunday, I'm sure they'll have probably 30 or 40,000 down there. James Roberts yet to have a double this year. I'm going to back him to have a big game and score two tries.
I think he scored like 9 tries against them in the last couple of years.
It's funny how you can get the wood on your old team pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But it can happen vice versa.
All right. We'll leave that for another day, see where you had your big wins against your former teams. And the round rounds out with Easter Monday footy. This is always a cracker because a lot of people leave Sydney's Easter show and they head to the footy after. 4 p.m. kickoff. The Tigers against the Eels. They're evenly split at the moment.
They certainly are. And, you know, tipsters would probably be flipping a coin right now, even though Parramatta have shown absolutely nothing in attack. And their defence has been just as bad. But I'll take Parramatta to bounce back this week.
Breaking news.
This is the last time I'm going to tip them. I need to see some enthusiasm. I'd like to see their forwards tip on, try and move the other forward pack around. This West Tigers pack is working for each other. Russell Packer, absolutely outstanding, leading from the front. Man of the match last week for me. Their defence is in order. I just don't know if they have enough attack-wise if Benji Marshall doesn't play. And I think that the Parramatta Reels have really bunkered down this week. Unfortunately, to our little mate, Cam King.
Oh, no, you've cursed him.
We've put the mock on him. He's been put back to reserve grade this week. But I think that Parramatta bounced back. And they can't get any worse, Para. They're down 16th in the power rankings. They need to show something if they're going to get off the bottom of the ladder there.
All right, well, I've gone for the Tigers, but I do feel for young Cam King because, was it week one or two on this podcast, you said if Cam King plays 10 straight NRL matches, we'll get him on the pod. He went down and was stretchered off against Manly. Luckily, he was okay. He came back last week, and now he's been dropped this week.
I spoke to Kingy yesterday about it. He's all right. We are still friends. And I said, look, mate, you can come on the podcast anytime you like. We need the listeners. We need the subscription. So no one's listening to me and Zach. We might have to get an NRL player on there.
We do. Cam King, come on board whenever you want.
Well, it's his fault. He was very chippy early on the tweets, and he's very good on the tooth.
He's following you into battle, I think.
Yeah, he's very good on the tooth. But, make sure that, get out there and hopefully he's on the podcast soon.
Jamie Sauer, that's all I've got time for. Remember, our listeners, rate, review, subscribe to the NRL podcast if you haven't already. Let us know what you think of how we're going. We can only get better. We can't be like the Eels and get any worse, can we?
And, NRL bosses, I'm on your side. I've just been I've been told to tell it how it is. So looking forward to hopefully being back next week and getting a confirmation email.
And we want all your questions coming in as well, thick and fast. So every Monday, Tuesday, after the footy, whatever grabs your attention across the weekend, the hashtag AskNRLPod, that's AskNRLPod, Send it to nrl.com Twitter. Sowie, your Twitter?
Yeah, Sowie official 6, Zach Bailey 14. Feel free to tag us in anything that you see over the weekend, anything unusual, anything that you want to hear about, anything that you want to ask me. Take behind the curtains and really try and answer all your questions. But it's a big part of our show, so don't forget to hashtag AskNRLPod and we'll try and answer all your questions.
Jamie Soward, enjoy your Easter weekend of footy and go the Eels, you'll say.
I just need something. I need more than 50%.
We'll speak to you next week. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.